Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear viewers, in the previous episodes, we have been evaluating the narrative of the collection of the Quran attributed to the Caliph Usman, as is recorded by Imam Bukhari in his Jami' al-Sahih. We have already discussed three points of criticism earlier on, and today I intend to go on and point out to some further points of criticism. And in this regard, this will be the first one that I'm going to discuss, which is actually the fourth one in series, is the fact that you would recall that the narrative says that at the time of this copying out of the Quran, it is reported that a certain verse of Surah Ahzab was missing. And so we find this part, which is actually adjacent to the one in the narrative. It is found directly adjacent to in the narrative. And then we have independent narratives as well, which say that a verse of Surah Ahzab was missing at the time of this copying out. So we will discuss this issue of this missing verse as a point of critique in this talk, and also carry on with some of the other points of criticism. Now, the first point of criticism in this regard, in this broad heading of issue of the missing verse of Surah Ahzab, is that Abdul Latif Rahmani, one of the scholars of the recent past, has raised this issue and this point that it is highly improbable that a verse be detected 13 years after the Quran had been recorded in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, because after all, the Quran remained with Caliph Abu Bakr and then with Caliph Umar ta'ala anhu. So can it be exceeded that none of them read the Quran and none of the other people who came in contact with this Mus'haf, if they ever did, read this Mus'haf, and they were not able to detect that there was a missing verse? So he says that it is something very, very improbable that this would have occurred. How could we accede to this or accept the fact that a Mus'haf which remained in the custody of the first two caliphs of Islam was never even read or even checked for any missing verses, and it was only in the time of Usman that this detection was made? So he points this out. And the second thing that he points out is that it is even more improbable that it should be found, the missing verse should be found with a single person, as the narrative says. And mostly the narratives say that it was Khuzaimah ibn Sabit with whom this missing verse was found. So he says that it is very improbable that even if it is exceeded, that it was found in written form, then in the presence of other companions like Muaz and Ubayy and Ubadah ibn Sabit and Usman himself, because they had written copies of the Quran. So how can it be exceeded that just a single person had that verse? So this is a gist of the criticism which is put forward by Abdul Latif Rahmani. And now John Gilchrist also has come up with a very valid criticism, and he has said that in the times of the collection of the Quran in Abu Bakr and in his times, we find that some of the narratives say that the missing verse of Surah Tawbah at that time, the missing verses which were found with those of Surah Tawbah, they were found with Khuzaimah ibn Sabit. And here again, in this particular collection also, or copying out also, we find that it was Khuzaimah ibn Sabit who had a missing verse of Surah Ahzab. So he raises this question that why did not Khuzaimah ibn Sabit come forward at that time earlier on when he had the missing verses of Surah Tawbah with him? He should have also said that he also has another missing verse with him, and that is that of Surah Ahzab. Why is it that he remembered at this time, and it was being copying out in the reign of Usman, that he came forward? So this is what John Gilchrist has presented. Tamanna Imadi also has criticized this issue of missing verse, and he has gone into much detail in this regard, and I'll summarize his points of criticism as well. So in the first point of his criticism is that he says that it is very strange that among the committee of four, only one person, Zayd ibn Thabit, remembered that there was a missing verse. After all the three other people who were part of that committee, they just went over it and they did not remember the fact. So he raised this question that why is it that a single person of the committee, Zayd ibn Thabit, remembered that there is a missing verse in the codex? He also then says that there is a narrative recorded by Imam Bukhari which shows that the missing verse of Surah Ahzab was revealed about Anas ibn Nadr, who was a paternal uncle of Anas ibn Malik. And then the narrative in this regard, I'll read out the narrative to you. The narrative is from Anas ibn Malik, and he says that قَالَ نَرَى هَذِهِ الْآيَةِ نَزَلَتْ فِي أَنَسِ ibn Nadr. And the verse, of course, is بِنَ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ رِجَالٌ صَدَقُوا مَا أَحَدُ اللَّهِ عَلَيْهِ. the translation of this whole narrative would be the Sumama reports from Anas ibn Malik, who says, in our opinion, the following verse was revealed about Anas ibn Nadr. And the verse is the same which I just read out. So, in other words, what Tamanna is actually trying to contend is that besides Khuzaimah ibn Sabit, Anas, who was also well aware of the verse, this verse, because it is he who has reported this narrative, and it is he who says, because the narrative says, and Anas ibn Malik, radiallahu anhu, naraha zil ayah nazalat fi Anas ibn Nadr. Anas says that when this verse was revealed, we knew that it was about his paternal uncle. So why is it that the missing verse was only found with Khuzaimah, as the narrative says? Because Anas too, Anas ibn Malik too, would be knowing this verse. Now, in this regard, the third point of critique which Tamanna has raised, he said that the verse of Surah Azab was found with Khuzaimah and inserted in the Quran because he carried the weight of two witnesses. This is the equation which we have been observing ever since the time of Abu Bakr as well. He too had collected the Quran, and we had critically evaluated that particular aspect as well. And here again we find that since Khuzaimah possessed the weight of two witnesses, so therefore a verse which he came up with was accepted simply because he had carried the weight of two witnesses. Otherwise, had he carried the weight of a single witness, then another person would have been required alongside him, as is being alleged. So, Tamanna says that we need to consider the fact that the narrative itself, which regards Khuzaimah ibn Sabit to have double the weight of a witness, is suspect. We have a narrative in this regard recorded in various books, which actually says that there was a certain incident which I am just going to narrate before you. It was after this incident that the Prophet regarded Khuzaimah ibn Sabit to possess the weight of two witnesses. So what Tamanna is now trying to make the point is that this narrative, it says that Khuzaimah had the power of two witnesses, the narrative which says so itself is suspect. So we are now going to analyze that narrative, which actually invests Khuzaimah with the power of two witnesses, or the person who has a double witness, or the double weight witness. This narrative is recorded by Abu Dawud in his Sunan, and I'm going to read out its text and translation before you. It is said that عن عمارة بن خزيمة أن عمه حدثه وهو من أصحاب النبي أن النبي ابتاع فرسا من أعرابي فاستقبعه النبي ليقضيه ثمن فرسه فأسرع رسول الله المش وأبطع العرابي فتفق رجال يعترضون العرابي فيساومونه بالفرس ولا يشعرون أن النبي ابتاعه فنادى الأعرابي رسول الله فقال إن كنت مبتاعا هذا الفرس وإلا بعته فقام النبي حين سمع نداء الأعرابي فقال أوليس قد ابتعته منك فقال الأعرابي لا والله ما بعتكه فقال النبي بلى قد ابتعته منك فتفق الأعرابي يقول هلم شهيدا فقال خزيمة بن ثابت أنا أشهد أنك قد بايعته فأقبل النبي على خزيمة فقال بما تشهد فقال بتصديقك يا رسول الله فجعل رسول الله شهادة خزيمة بشهادة رجلين. A translation of this is that it is narrated by Umara ibn Khuzaimah's uncle, who was a companion of the Prophet, that the Prophet bought a horse from a Bedouin. The Prophet asked the Bedouin to follow him so that he could pay the horse's price to him. The Prophet walked at a brisk speed, but the Bedouin continued to walk slowly and was obviously thus left behind. On the way, some people started to pester the Bedouin and offered him a new price for the horse, and they did not obviously know that the Prophet had already bought it. The Bedouin called the Prophet and said, "Do you want to buy the horse, or shall I sell it to someone else?" When the Prophet heard these words of the Bedouin, he stopped and replied, "Have I not already bought it from you?" The Bedouin said, "No, I have not sold it to you." The Prophet responded, "In fact, I have already bought it from you." At this, the Bedouin asked the Prophet to produce a witness to this deal. Khuzaimah ibn Sabit said, "I bear witness you had bought it from him." The Prophet came over to Khuzaimah and asked him, "How can you bear witness when you were not present at that time?" He replied, "On the basis of your testifying, O Messenger of God." At this, the Prophet regarded the testimony of Khuzaimah to carry double the weight. So this is a simple translation of the narrative. And Imadi has strongly criticized both the text and the chain of narration of this narrative. But the strongest criticism that he's made on the text is that can it be accepted that a person as impeccable as the prophet would have struck such a deal? Could he have accepted the witness of one of his followers who was not even present at the time when the whole deed was being struck? We know that the Bedouin would had never that Khuzaimah was never present in the time of the deal with the Bedouin. When the Prophet was making was buying the horse from that Bedouin, Khuzaimah was never present. So could he have granted Khuzaimah the title of Zushahadatain, which means the person who carries the weight of two witnesses? How is it possible when Khuzaimah ibn Thabit was not even present at the time of the deal? And how would have the Prophet accepted Khuzaimah that he is one of the witnesses when the Prophet himself knew that he was not present? So therefore, he says that this is something which is so improbable and impossible, keeping in view with the personality of the Prophet, that he would have struck such a deal. And we know that there are people, there are historians who have said on the basis of this narrative that this is actually the basis of the fact that the Prophet regarded Khuzaimah to have carried the weight of two witnesses, the weight of two witnesses. So Tamanna says that this is virtually mind-boggling to accept the fact that the Prophet would have regarded someone to be present when he was not present and regarded him to be a person who was a witness to a deal he had made with a Bedouin when that person was not even present at the time of the deal. Tamanna has gone on to criticize the chain of narration of the narrative as well. And he says, he's made a couple of points that I'm going to summarize again before you. The first point in this regard is that in all the textual variants of this narrative, it is only Umarah ibn Khuzaimah, who is Khuzaimah ibn Thabit's son, who reports this narrative from his paternal uncle. So this is the nature of the narrative, that it's just a single person reporting from his paternal uncle. Now, the next point that he makes is that the name of this paternal uncle, who is alleged to be a companion, is not even specified. We know that the words are an ammihi, from his paternal uncle. So the name is not specified. In the absence of the name of a person, again, the whole narrative becomes questionable. Who was the companion? What was his name when it's not specified? Now, Ibn Manda is a person who died in the 395 Hijra, to be exact. It is said that he was the first person, it is alleged, to unravel this secret. And he says that the name of the uncle was actually Umarah ibn Thabit. So works such as Al-Istiyab of Ibn Abdul Barr and other, they are absolutely devoid of any mention of this name. So Tamanna makes this point that we are not able to find out who this person is, and it is only after so many centuries, three centuries later, that a person by the name of Ibn Manda says, okay, I'll tell you who the name of this person is, and he is Umarah ibn Thabit. So he says that, again, this is something which is questionable. The third point which Tamanna Imadi makes in this regard is, he says that the central person or the madar of this, of all the variants of this narrative, is again Ibn Shahab Zuhri. And we have already discussed his personality in detail in some of the earlier episodes, and we have seen how an alternative picture exists about his personality. He has been regarded as Amir al-Mu'mineen fil Hadith. However, he is guilty of Irsal, Idraj, Tadlis, and even of reporting the same fact in a different manner to two different people. We've already gone through that. So Tamanna just questions there is no narrative found anywhere which is devoid of the personality of Ibn Shahab Zuhri, who, as I have just pointed out, and in fact, Tamanna himself is a person who had this thing pointed out, that Zuhri is not a reliable person at all. Now, the fourth point that Tamanna raises in the chain of narration, when he's criticizing the chain of narration of this narrative, is he says that it seemed that Umarah ibn Khuzaimah generally narrates from people who are not very well known. So he narrates from people who are generally not very well known. For example, it is only he and Salim ibn Abil Ja'ad who narrate from Sabura ibn al-Fakih, about whom it is said that he was a companion, and he is not a very well-known person, and he has various names, as he's been regarded as Ibn al-Fakih or Ibn Abi Fakih, Ibn Abi al-Fakihah, So there are the different names which have been attributed to him. Another thing that Tamanna in this regard, this is the same point that he points out, is that another not very well-known companion from whom Umara ibn Khuzaimah and Haris ibn Fudail narrate is Abdurrahman ibn Abil Qurad al-Ansari. So Abdurrahman ibn Abil Qurad al-Ansari, also called Abdurrahman ibn Faq al-Faqih, he is a person from whom Umara narrates, and he's not a very well-known person. In Tehzib al-Tehzib of Ibn Hajar, Abu al-Fatah al-Azdi says that Umara ibn Khuzaimah is the sole person who narrates from him. So that is something which is of regard as well. Similarly, Umara ibn Khuzaimah is the only person who narrates from Kasir ibn As-Sa'ib. So as was the case with Abdurrahman ibn al-Faqih, Umara is also another person from whom the sole narrator is Umara is Kasir ibn Sa'ib. Now there are at least three more persons by this name, and some authorities have counted them to be the same person. Now even if there exists more than one Kasir ibn Sa'ib, there is no doubt that they are not very well known. So the point that Tamanna is actually making here is that Umara ibn Khuzaimah has a habit of narrating from people who are not very well known, and he is therefore saying or implying the fact that when he says that he narrates from his paternal uncle, so this is in line with this habit of his in which he narrates from people who are very little known or who are less known in history. And the fifth point which Tamanna makes while criticizing the chain of narration of the narrative is that this narrative is not found in Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Al-Bukhari or in the Sunan of Al-Tirmizi. However, the narrative of Surah Ahzab verse being found with Khuzaimah ibn Sabit, and thereby the verse being accepted because Khuzaimah's witness carries double the weight, is found in both these books. So whereas the fact that Khuzaimah ibn Sabit, the narrative of Surah Ahzab is found in both these books, this narrative is not found in Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Al-Bukhari, neither in Al-Jami' al-Sahih of Al-Bukhari, nor in the Jami' al-Sahih of Tirmizi, Sunan of Tirmizi. So he says that it is strange that while both these books contain narratives in which it is said that Khuzaimah's on Khuzaimah's witness, the whole the verse was accepted because he carried double weight, but both of these books are devoid of the narrative which actually invests Khuzaimah as a person who has double the weight. Now, this is a summary, viewers, which I have presented of the views of Abdul Latif Rahmani, John Gilchrist, and finally Tamanna Imadi regarding the issue of the missing verses. I'd like now to comment on these points which these three personalities have raised, and I think that most of the points which Rahmani, Gilchrist and Imadi have raised on the issue of the missing verse are strong. In this regard, I'd further like to point out that it might be of interest to note that non-Ibn Shahab Zuhri narratives, or in other words, narratives in which Ibn Shahab Zuhri does not figure, they do not contain the episode of the missing verse. And we will discuss them later on in some of our later episodes of this topic. But it is a very, very interesting fact to note that this whole issue of missing verse is just found in narratives in which Zuhri is found. Other narratives in which Zuhri does not figure, this episode of the missing verse, or this incident of the missing verse, is never mentioned. Imadi contends that at best Anas ibn Malik, his contention was that Anas ibn Malik should have known of the missing verse because it was revealed about Anas ibn Nazr, a paternal uncle of his. Now, his critique is, as I have just pointed out earlier on as well. Now, his critique is on a premise which his opponents do not contend. This is my comment, that his opponents do not contend. They do not say that the verse was not known to people. Several people, including Zayd, knew it by the same token, and several people had it in mind. Anas ibn Malik may have known it also by heart. Now, the contention of the people, the opponents, is that it was not found in written form with any person except Khuzaimah ibn Sabit. So what Tamanna is actually saying is, he's saying this very strange, that it was just found with a single person. So the reply that people have already given much before him in this regard is that it's not that they are saying that it is just found with a single person. It is not found written with a single person. That is what actually their criticism is. In this regard, the real the real criticism which actually comes to mind in this regard is that even if it is accepted, as Tamanna's opponents generally say, or people who have a different view generally say, that this verse was found by with a single person in written form, then the real criticism which comes to mind is that even this seems to be very, very fishy and very unacceptable, that we know that there were people with whom there were written copies of the Quran. So how can it be accepted that even in written form, it was just found with a single person? So this too needs to be gauged. And viewers, we also need to understand the fact that we are discussing the fact that verses of the Quran, when they were being collected or copied out, they were inserted at the behest of two witnesses. And we have seen and criticized that how this verse, which invests a person with the attribute of carrying double the weight, is the narrative is so weak. Now, a question which can be raised on top of all this is that we are actually conceding the fact that the Quran was being collected on the authority of two witnesses, even though that is itself is not established. But the fact is that let us assume, just for the sake of discussion, that it is established that for example, Khuzaimah had the weight of two witnesses, or that this copying at the instance of this copying out, whoever came forward had this weight of two witnesses. Then the fact of the matter is that should it be acceptable that on the behest of two witnesses the Quran be copied out or collected? Is it plausible when the Quran was being revealed and was being read by so many people, and it is claimed and it is established, as well as we shall see in some of the later episodes, that the whole revelation of the Quran and the status of the Quran was such that it possessed tawatur and perpetuation, which meant that a large number of people transmitted each part of the Quran. So in the presence of that, how should the Quran and why should the Quran be collected at the behest of two witnesses? So I am putting forward this critique on top of the fact that if we assume that the two witness is narrative is correct. I have even pointed out earlier that even then the narrative itself does not carry water. It does not carry any force, any. It's not reliable at all. But for the sake of for discussion, even if it is accepted it is reliable, then we are actually conceding the fact that what is actually tawatur, or was mutawatir, is being now relegated to a degree in which we are relying on one or two people in collecting it. So this is obviously not acceptable, as we shall see later on in some of the later episodes, and I shall describe before you how the Quran, the whole of the Quran and parts of it, were transmitted by many, many people, and it was not just left to one or two witnesses to testify that this is part of, this is the Quran, this is not the Quran. Now, Imadi's criticism on the chain and text of the Zushahadatain narrative is strong, except for the fact that he has erroneously concluded that Umara ibn Khuzaimah generally narrates from people who are not well known. I had earlier pointed out that one of the points of his criticism is that Umara is a person who only narrates from people who are lesser known. Here I am trying to challenge this fact that this is not correct, because we find that there are other people from whom Umara narrates, and they are well known. So some of the well-known companions from whom Umara ibn Khuzaimah narrates are, and I'm going to point out their names. One of them is Amr ibn al-As, and he has been mentioned in the Musnad of Abd ibn Humayd. And then he also narrates from Usman ibn Hunayf, and this can be seen in the Tahzib al-Kamal. And he also narrates from Abdullah ibn Abbas, and this can be seen in Ibn Hibban's As-Siqat. So this is not absolutely correct what Tamanna had surmised. Umara does narrate from people who are known as well, or well known as well. Now, another point which raises a question on this narrative is a disagreement on the name of the companion from whom Umara narrates, although we have already seen that the name from whom Umara, or the person from whom Umara narrates, is not mentioned. But it's although Ibn Manda, according to Tamanna Imadi, had pointed out that it was a certain person who had narrated this, but I'm going to give you further data which says that it is not even certain who this person is, because there are various opinions about, from various authorities. So thus, for example, we find in the case of Ibn Mandah, I had pointed out that his opinion was that Umara ibn Sabit is the person who is actually the uncle of Umara ibn Khuzaymah. Now, the other authorities in this regard who have presented their views are, for example, Ibn Sa'd. He has pointed out on the authority of his teacher, Al-Waqidi, that Umara ibn Khuzaymah has not specified the name of his uncle, but according to Al-Waqidi, Khuzaymah ibn Sabit, who is Umara ibn Sabit's father, had two brothers. One of them was called Wahwa and the other Abdullah. In the opinion of, now this is another authority, Muhammad ibn Ishaq has recorded in a narrative by Al-Hakim in his Al-Mustadrak, Khuzaymah ibn Sabit had two brothers. One was called Abdullah and the other was called Dahraj. And another authority, Hafiz ibn Hajar, says that Waliuddin Iraqi has mentioned in his book Kitab al-Atraf bi Awham al-Atraf that his uncle was well known and that Abu Ahmad al-Askari has stated in his book As-Sahaba that his name was Ubaidullah. So viewers, we can see that there are so many people or at least three or four authorities naming different people as the person who would be Umara's uncle. So again, this casts doubt as to the fact that who exactly was the person from whom Umara narrated. And in the absence of an exact name, this narrative, together with its critique on the text, this particular aspect that we have a person who is majhul in the terminology of hadith, who's unknown, he cannot be properly determined, and this narrative becomes extremely weak. Here I'd also like to further point out another thing, and I would like to say that there is another chain of the narrative which does not contain Umara ibn Sabit at its beginning. So it's not just Umara ibn Sabit, as the Manna had contended. Imadi seems to be unaware of that chain. And as you can see from the chart, that this chain begins from Khuzaymah ibn Sabit, and his grandson, Muhammad ibn Umar, narrates from him. So this is one place which perhaps Imadi has missed, and I'd like to point it out. But this chain again has some problems, and there are actually two flaws in this chain. Firstly, as pointed out by Ibn Hajar, Muhammad ibn Umar is not a well-known person, and his words are لا يكاد يعرف, that he's not very well-known. And secondly, Khuzaymah ibn Sabit died in 37 Hijra in the Battle of Siffin when Umara ibn Sabit was just 7 years old. So there is no way in the world that Muhammad ibn Umara could have met or heard from his grandfather. So although this chain is present, but because of these two flaws, it again is unreliable. So all in all, viewers, we can see that this issue of the missing verse, which is the fourth point of criticism, has a number of problems in it. And because of these problems, we find that this issue of the missing verse is something which although is part of this narrative and also exists as there are independent narratives which exist which say that Surah Az-Zahab verse was missing. But because of the reasons which I have just cited and referred to, this whole thing and this whole episode of this missing verse becomes questionable. Now, let me move on to the fifth point of criticism in this regard, and that is that it is strange, and this has already been pointed out when I was discussing the collection of the Quran in the times of the Caliph Abu Bakr, that it is strange that a state-owned collection would remain with the Caliph Umar's daughter Hafsa. So if ever a collection had taken place in the time of Abu Bakr, the collected Quran should have been in the state custody. And it is very strange that Usman had tolerated this possession with Hafsa. Why did he tolerate it? And once Hafsa had given her consent to hand it over to him to have it copied, why did he tolerate it to hand it back? He should never have promised her to that he'll return this codex, because after all, it belonged to the state. So again, this is something which I've already pointed out earlier while I was discussing the critique on the collection of the Quran narrative by Caliph Abu Bakr, that why is it that here again we find Usman returning the Mus'haf after copying it back to Hafsa. If it was a state collection, as is alleged or as is apparent from the collection of the Quran in the times of Abu Bakr, then Usman should not have returned it, and he should have actually insisted upon Hafsa to give it to him, and then later on, as he himself came to the conclusion that he should have made the copy. So this is something which fails to stand to the test of reason. Next, we come to the sixth point of criticism disregard, and I'd call it the mode of writing. We know that there was a word called a tabut, which became a point of difference. Its script became a point of difference when the Quran was being copied out, and this has been mentioned in the main narrative. So according to Rahmani, how could Zayd's preference be overruled by three other committee members when it is known that none of the other three famous reciters are as adept as Zayd? We know from the narrative that Zayd had said that the script of the word is a tabu, but the other three people had insisted that it is a tabut, and when the matter was referred to the Caliph Usman, he had said it should be written as a tabut. So in short, this would mean that Usman had actually overruled Zayd. So this is highly improbable, and it's, what he's actually implying is that it is highly improbable that Zayd would have insisted that the script of the word is a tabu. How could this have been possible? Okay, now in this regard, Tamanna Imadi has also raised a point, and he said that what was the script of the word in the codex prepared by Abu Bakr from which the committee was making copies? After all, they were making copies. So the previous criticism was made by Rahmani, in which it was just said that how was Zayd's opinion overruled. Now here, Imadi, in his critique, is actually making the point that in the original, from which the original codex of Hafsa, there would have been a certain spelling or way in which the word would have been written. So whatever the way in which it had been written by Hafsa, in Hafsa's codex, it should have been copied the way it was done so. It was originally, in which it actually originally existed. So the point that Imadi raises is that what was the script of the word in the codex prepared by Abu Bakr from which the committee was making copies? Was it a tabut or a tabu? If it was a tabut, then why would Zayd insist on a tabu? It's as simple as that. If it was a tabut, then Zayd should not have insisted on tabu. And if a tabu was written, then Usman would never have insisted on a tabut. So on the other hand, if the word written was a tabu, then Usman would never had insisted that a tabut be adopted, because it was Abu Bakr and Umar with whose ratification it was written. So, and if he thought that that his own opinion was the correct one, he would definitely would have consulted other senior companions. So viewers, all in all, we can see that in this case also, the fact that the script of a certain word, a tabut, or written or spelled variously as tabu as well, could have come into question for reasons which Rahmani and Imadi have raised and which I have just alluded to. So I would now conclude this episode with this sixth point of criticism. And as we have seen in this episode, that we have discussed three points of criticism. And the first of them is that the issue of the missing verse, then we have discussed the state-owned collection issue, and finally we have discussed this mode of writing of a word, a tabut, which was part of the original narrative. In the future episode, inshallah, we will continue with our critique on the text and chain of narration of this narrative, but for the moment, it is أَكُولُ قَوْلِ هَذَا وَاسْتَغْفِرُ اللَّهَ لِي وَلَكُمْ وَلِسَارِ الْمُسْلِمِينَ وَالْمُسْلِمَاتِ